The Mill on the Floss by George Eliot. A wide plain, where the broadening floss hurries on between its green banks to the sea, and the loving tide rushing to meet it checks its passage with an impetuous embrace. On this mighty tide, the black ships, laden with the fresh-scented fir planks, with rounded sacks of oil-bearing seed, or with a dark glitter of coal, are borne along to the town of St. Ogg's, which shows its aged fluted red roofs and the broad gables of its wharfs between the low wooded hill and the river brink, tinging the water with a soft purple hue under the transient glance of this February sun. Just by the red roof town, the tributary Ripple flows with a lively current into the Floss. How lovely the little river is, with its dark, changing wavelets. It seems to me like a living companion while I wander along the bank and listen to its low, placid voice, as to the voice of one who is deaf and loving. I remember those large, dipping willows. I remember the stone bridge. And this is Dorlcote Mill. Even in this leafless time of departing February, it is pleasant to look at. Perhaps the chill, damp season adds a charm to the trimly kept, comfortable dwelling house, as old as the elms and chestnuts that shelter it from the northern blast. The stream is brimful now, and lies high in this little withy plantation, and half drowns the grassy fringe of the croft in front of the house. Let me tell you what the inhabitants of that dwelling house, Mr. and Mrs. Tulliver, were talking about as they sat by the bright fire in the left-hand parlour on that very afternoon.
"What I want, you know," said Mr. Tulliver, "what I want is to give Tom a good education, and education'll be a bread to him. That was what I was thinking of when I gave notice for him to leave the academy at Lady Day. I mean to put him down to a downright good school at Midsummer. The 2 years at the academy I'd have done well enough if I'd meant to make a miller and farmer of him, for he's had a fine sight more schooling nor I ever got. All the learning my father ever paid for was a bit of birch at one end and the alphabet at t'other. But I should like Tom to be a bit of a scholard, so as he might be up to the tricks of these fellas as talk fine and write with a flourish. It'd be a help to me with these lawsuits and arbitrations and things. I wouldn't make a downright lawyer of the lad. I should be sorry for him to be a rascal. But a sort of engineer or surveyor or an auctioneer and valuer, like Riley, or one of them smartish businesses are all profits and no outlay, only for a big watch chain and a high stool. They're pretty nigh all one, and they're not far off being even with the law, I believe. For Riley looks Lawyer Wakeham in the face as hard as one cat looks another. He's none frightened at him." Mr. Tulliver was speaking to his wife, a blonde, comely woman, in a fan-shaped cap. I am afraid to think how long it is since fan-shaped caps were worn. They must be so near coming in again. At that time, when Mrs. Tulliver was nearly 40, they were new at St. Ogg's, and considered sweet things.
"Well, Mr. Tulliver, you know best. I've no objections. But hadn't I better kill a couple of fowl and have the aunts and uncles to dinner next week, so as you may hear what Sister Glegg and Sister Pullet have got to say about it? There's a couple of fowl wants killing."
"You may kill every fowl of the yard if you like, Bessie. But I shall ask neither aunt nor uncle what I'm to do with my own lad," said Mr. Tulliver defiantly.
"Dear heart," said Mrs. Tulliver, shocked at this sanguinary rhetoric. "How can you talk so, Mr. Tulliver?
But it's your way to speak disrespectful of my family, and Sister Glegg throws all the blame upon me, though I'm sure I'm as innocent as the babe unborn."
Mr. Tulliver had the marital habit of not listening very closely, and since his mention of Mr. Riley, had been apparently occupied in a tactile examination of his woollen stockings.
"I think I've hit it, Bessie," was his first remark, after a short silence. "Riley's as likely a man as any to know of some school. He's had schooling himself, and goes about to all sorts of places, arbitrating and valuing and that. And we shall have time to talk it over tomorrow night when the business is done. I want Tom to be such a sort of man as Riley. You know, as can talk pretty nigh as well as if it was all wrote out for him, and knows a good lot of words as don't mean much, so as you can't lay hold of them when they're law, and a good solid knowledge of business too."
"Well," said Mrs. Tulliver, So far as talking proper and knowing everything and walking with a bend in his back and setting his hair up, I shouldn't mind the lad being brought up to that. But them fine-talking men from the big towns mostly wear false shirt fronts. They wear a frill till it's all a mess and then hide it with a bib. I know Riley does.
It seems a bit of a pity, though, said Mr. Tulliver reflectively, as the lad should take after the mother's side instead of the little wench. That's the worst on it with a crossing of breeds. You can never just calculate what'll come on it. The little un takes after my side now. She's twice as cute as Tom. Too cute for a woman, I'm afraid, continued Mr. Tulliver, turning his head dubiously first on one side and then on the other. It's no mischief much while she's a little un, but an over-cute woman's no better nor a long-tailed sheep. She'll fetch none the bigger price for that.
Yes, it is a mischief while she's a little un, Mr. Tulliver, for it all runs to naughtiness. How to keep her in a clean pinafore 2 hours together passes my cunning. And now you put me of the mind, continued Mrs. Tulliver, rising and going to the window, I don't know where she is now, and it's pretty nigh tea time. Ah, I thought so. Wandering up and down by the water like a wild thing. She'll tumble in some day.
It was Easter week, and Mrs. Tulliver's cheesecakes were more exquisitely light than usual.
A puff of wind had made 'em blow about like feathers,
Kezia, the housemaid, said, feeling proud to live under a mistress who could make such pastry, so that no season or circumstance could have been more propitious for a family party, even if it had not been advisable to consult Sister Glegg and Sister Pullet about Tom's going to school.
"I'd as lief not invite Sister Dean this time," said Mrs. Tulliver, "for she's as jealous and having as can be, and she's allus trying to make the worst of my poor children to their aunts and uncles."
"Yes, yes," said Mr. Tulliver. "Ask her to come. I never hardly get a bit of talk with Dean now. We haven't had him this 6 months. What's it matter what she says? My children need be beholden to nobody."
That's what you always say, Mr. Tulliver, but I'm sure I don't know what she won't get him to do, said Mrs. Tulliver, for my children are so awkward with their aunts and uncles. Maggie's 10 times naughtier when they come than she is other days, and Tom doesn't like them, bless him, though it's more natural in a boy than a girl.
And there's Lucy Dean, such a good child. You may sit her on a stool, and there she'll sit for an hour together and never offer to get off. I can't help loving that child as if she was my own, and I'm sure she's more like my child than Sister Dean's, for she's always had a very poor colour for one of our family, Sister Dean has.
Well, well, if you're fond of the child, ask her father and mother to bring her with them. And won't you ask their uncle and aunt Moss, too, and some of their children?
Oh, dear, Mr. Tulliver, why, there'd be 8 people besides the children, and I must put 2 more leaves on the table, besides reaching down more of the dinner service. And you know as well as I do, as my sisters and your sisters don't well suit together.
Well, well, do as you like, Bessie, said Mr. Tulliver, taking up his hat and walking out to the mill.
Few wives were more submissive than Mrs. Tulliver on all points unconnected with her family relations, but she had been a Miss Dodson, and the Dodsons were a very respectable family indeed, as much looked up to as any in their own parish or the next to it. The Miss Dodsons had always been thought to hold up their heads very high, and no one was surprised the 2 eldest had married so well. The Dodsons were certainly a handsome family, and Mrs. Glegg was not the least handsome of the sisters. As she sat in Mrs. Tulliver's armchair, no impartial observer could have denied that for a woman of 50 she had a very comely face and figure, though Tom and Maggie consider their Aunt Glegg as the very type of ugliness. Mrs. Pullet, upon her arrival, brushed each doorpost with great nicety about the latitude of her shoulders. At that period, a woman was truly ridiculous to an instructed eye if she did not measure 1.5 yards across the shoulders. And having done that, she advanced into the parlour where Mrs. Glegg was seated.
"Well, sister, you're late," said Mrs. Glegg, rather sharply, as they shook hands.
Mrs. Pullet sat down, lifting up her mantle carefully behind. Mrs. Pullet had married a gentleman farmer and had leisure and money to carry everything to the highest pitch of respectability. Of all her sisters, Mrs. Tulliver certainly preferred her sister Pullet, not without a return of preference. But Mrs. Pullet was sorry Bessie had those naughty, awkward children. She would do the best she could by them, but it was a pity they weren't as good and as pretty as Sister Dean's child. Maggie and Tom, on their part, thought their Aunt Pullet tolerable, chiefly because she was not their Aunt Glegg. Still, it was agreed by the sisters, in Mrs. Tulliver's absence, that the Tulliver blood did not mix well with the Dodson blood, that, in fact, poor Bessie's children were Tullivers, and that Tom, at 13, notwithstanding he had the Dodson complexion, was likely to be as contrary as his father. As for Maggie, at 9, she was the picture of her Aunt Moss, Mr. Tulliver's sister, a large-boned woman who had married as poorly as could be, had no china, and had a husband who had much ado to pay his rent. When Mrs. Dean arrived with little Lucy, Mrs. Tulliver had to look on with a silent pang at Lucy's blonde curls. It was quite unaccountable that Mrs. Dean, the thinnest and sallowest of all the Miss Dodsons, should have had this child, who might have been taken for Mrs. Tulliver's any day. And Maggie always looked twice as dark as usual when she was by the side of Lucy. She did today, when she and Tom came in from the garden with their father and their Uncle Glegg. Maggie had thrown off her bonnet very carelessly, and coming in with her black hair rough as well as out of curl, rushed at once to Lucy, who was standing by her mother's knee. Lucy put up the neatest little rosebud mouth to be kissed. Everything about her was neat, her little round neck, with the row of coral beads, her little straight nose, not at all snubby, her little clear eyebrows, rather darker than her curls, to match her hazel eyes, which looked up with shy pleasure at Maggie, taller by the head, though scarcely a year older. Maggie always looked at Lucy with delight. She was fond of fancying a world where the people never got any larger than children of their own age, and she made the queen of it just like Lucy, with a little crown on her head and a little sceptre in her hand, only the queen was Maggie herself in Lucy's form. "Oh, Lucy," she burst out after kissing her, "you'll stay with Tom and me, won't you? Oh, kiss her, Tom." Tom, too, had come up to Lucy, but he was not going to kiss her, no. He came up to her with Maggie because it seemed easier on the whole than saying, "How do you do?" to all those aunts and uncles. He stood looking at nothing in particular.
"Go and speak to your aunts and uncles, my dears," said Mrs. Tulliver, looking anxious and melancholy. She wanted to whisper to Maggie a command to go and have her hair brushed.
"Well, and how do you do? And I hope you're good children, are you?"
said Aunt Glegg in her loud, emphatic way, as she took their hands, hurting them with her large rings, and kissing their cheeks much against their desire.
"Look up, Tom, look up. Boys as go to boarding school should hold their heads up. Look at me now."
Tom declined that pleasure, apparently, for he tried to draw his hand away.
"Put your hair behind your ears, Maggie, and keep your frock on your shoulder."
"Well, my dears," said Aunt Pullet, in a compassionate voice, "you grow wonderful fast. I doubt they'll outgrow their strength," she added, looking over their heads with a melancholy expression at their mother. "I think the girl has too much hair. I'd have it thinned and cut shorter, sister, if I was you. Isn't good for her health. It's that as makes her skin so brown, I shouldn't wonder. Don't you think so, Sister Dean?"